Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Edward Kondrat, who is the world's leading homeopathic ophthalmologist, and certainly a very interesting history of both traditional and holistic therapies for treating eye disease. And I'm very pleased to see someone has investigated homeopathic treatments for eye disease, because that was something that I had always felt had a great deal of promise. He has two other best-selling books, Healing the Eye the Natural Way and Microcurrent Stimulation Miracle Eye Cure. But today we're going to interview him on his book, 10 Essentials to Save Your Sight. I think some of the things we're going to talk about today may be surprising to listeners, like fish oil can be harmful for your eyes. And many of the things that I have actually suspected for a while were confirmed in this book. And so I was real pleased to see that someone else other than myself has been suspecting that the role of melatonin and some of the other nutrients are so important to eyesight. And I'm real pleased to have him on the show today. Welcome, Dr. Kondrat. Where are you calling in from?
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show, Dr. Kolb, and thank you so much for those kind words in that introduction. I was pinching myself and saying, is that really me that she's talking about? But I guess it is.
It is.
I'm calling you from Dade City, Florida. Now, Dade City is not Dade County. Everybody who hears Dade thinks it's Miami. I'm located in Central Florida, probably about 40 minutes north of Tampa. We're in an agricultural area, which is just beautiful, and this is where I have my wellness center. It's very peaceful, and it's not like the typical Florida image that you think of in your mind.
Well, that's a great place location for your practice because, as you know, very many older people settle in Florida. And then being in the central part of Florida, that's perfect. You can get patients from all over the state. I'm sure you get patients that fly in, too.
Yeah, we have patients that fly in from all over the United States and, for that matter, all over the world. So it's a good location, especially for the Europeans. It's an easy flight from Europe to Tampa or Miami, and the Europeans love Florida for vacationing.
Well, great. Would you like to tell our audience a little bit about your training and how you got interested in homeopathic medicine?
Well, I started out as a traditional ophthalmologist, and I had my gun set pretty high. I thought I'd really be able to help a lot of people, and I loved the challenge. And I also had some surgical skills, so I liked to, you know, play a detective in terms of trying to find the underlying cause of disease. Most of my treatments were surgical, and I developed a very big surgical practice. And it wasn't until I developed some health issues myself. I developed severe adult-onset asthma. I was taking three medications, which had horrible side effects. One of the side effects was a tremor, and you can't be a very good eye surgeon when you have
no,
a tremor.
You can't.
So I was taking a beta blocker to get rid of the tremor when I was doing surgery, but the beta blocker exacerbated my asthma.
Yeah.
So that was my life. It was my life. So I went to the top pulmonary doctor in the city, and I said, hey, I want my old lungs back. I have no family history of asthma. I never smoked. What can I do to get my lungs back? And he said, well, there's no cure for adult-onset asthma. Make sure you take all your medications. And that was it. So around that time, I was doing some triathlon training and running marathons. I was using homeopathic remedies for minor ailments, and they worked quite well. So I did some research, and I thought, well, maybe homeopathy could help my asthma. So if there ever was going to be a placebo effect, it should have been that first homeopathic visit, because I was convinced homeopathy would cure me of my asthma. So I went and I saw a professional homeopathic doctor, and I was prescribed a remedy, and nothing happened, no change at all. I went back. Second remedy was prescribed, and it may have helped a little bit, but nothing really earth-shattering. But that third remedy I took, my goodness, it cured me of my asthma. I couldn't believe it. No more medications, although I carried my inhaler around for about a year because I kept on thinking, you know, it's too good to be true. So after that event, I said, my goodness, why didn't they teach us this in medical school? And could homeopathy help all of my eye patients who had chronic eye problems and who weren't doing well?
Right.
And I discovered that in the early 1900s, there were many eye doctors who were homeopathic eye doctors, and that New York Eye and Ear Hospital in Manhattan was a homeopathic eye hospital, if you can believe that. So I began to research homeopathy and the treatment of eye disease, and began to apply it to patients. And essentially, I had two practices under one roof. I was that board-certified surgeon and then that homeopathic doctor. So I began enjoying the homeopathic and alternative side so much better, I finally decided to abandon my surgical practice. And that was probably 15, 16 years ago, and have never regretted the fact. But now I feel that I'm truly able to help people, not only help them regain their eyesight when they have been told nothing else can be done, just live with your visual problem, but also at the same time, I feel that homeopathy helps improve their mental and emotional state because it treats the underlying cause of their disease.
So you have, in the beginning of your book, a section devoted to nutrition, and with particular attention to high fructose corn syrup, which I happen to be allergic to, and you can probably explain to the audience why that is. And as well as
I'm not recommending high fructose corn syrup.
No, I'm saying the effect of it. Have warnings about it.
Oh yeah, big warnings.
Right.
Danger.
Well, probably a lot of people are allergic to high fructose corn syrup, and it's because of the GMO corn that it's made from. Is that not right?
Well, there's a couple of problems with high fructose corn syrup. One, as you mentioned, it's made from genetically modified corn, which I think is all the genetically modified food is destroying our health, and I think it's a contributing factor to a lot of chronic disease. And those listeners who want more information on that, I would highly recommend looking at Jeffrey Smith's book, Seeds of Deception. He's kind of my hero. He's really brought a lot of this into the forefront and has really helped in the battle of eliminating genetically modified food. There's a second problem with high fructose corn syrup. It's not really a true sugar. It's not metabolized in the normal fashion that we think of that glucose is. It's shunted more towards fat storage. It puts an extra stress on the pancreas. And I think that's a contributing factor to increase in obesity in our country and also an increase in diabetes. And the third reason is that in the manufacturing of high fructose corn syrup, there tends to accumulate traces of mercury. Mm-hmm. Some alternative doctors feel that there may be more mercury in high fructose corn syrup than in tuna. And, you know, we all know that you should, you know, avoid eating tuna because of the mercury content. So you got to stay away from that high fructose corn syrup. And unfortunately, as you know, it's in everything.
Right,
it's in
it
most
is.
Soda drinks, salad dressings, cereal, condiments. I mean, it's just horrible. Just horrible.
Yeah, it's a real problem if you need to avoid it, like I do, because you have an allergy to it. And then Jeffrey Smith is actually speaking in Atlanta, I think, in the next week or so. I interviewed him on both Seeds of Deception and Genetic Roulette, the two books he wrote. And he is at the forefront of recognition that the genetically modified foods are very poorly tested, and in fact, probably not tested at all in an adequate manner, and yet have been kind of forced upon the public with the FDA's blessing, which is crazy because they're in charge of protecting our health. But it seems like they're working for the companies that are putting these forth, like Monsanto. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, my friend calls Monsanto Monsatan.
Right. Yeah.
Not Monsanto,
Monsatan. Yeah.
But I'm having a program myself. We have a couple of people that are staying at the Wellness Center, and one of the things that I do is every evening I show an educational video. And the first evening, everybody sits down after dinner, and we watch genetic roulette for seeds of deception, because I think it's so important that people are educated, and they really make every effort possible to improve their diet. I think that's really the number one cause of chronic disease and eye problems.
You know,
we need to go back to basics. I mean, food is our best medicine, and you got to start there. Food is our best medicine.
Mm-hmm. I see a lot of patients with mold in or around their breast implants, saline and double lumen. And one of the things, I'm not sure you're aware as an ophthalmologist, but one of my patients was the wife of an ophthalmologist. She had mold in her breast implants, and she had a very low VEGF, and she had actually had a retinal detachment. And her husband told me that low VEGFs are associated with retinal detachments, and they're also associated with shortness of breath. And so whenever I have patients with a lot of mold, I'll treat them with antifungals, and then I'll do biotoxin detox. But we try to warn them that if they have any visual symptoms consistent with a retinal detachment, of course they get right in, because it's very important to get that fixed right away to avoid blindness or permanent problems. So we do warn them about that. So that's
The toxins in our environment, molds, other environmental factors are, you know, a major problem. And I think one of the reasons is our immune system is reduced because we don't have adequate nutrition, and we're just constantly being exposed to other toxins, you know, such as heavy metals, which also weaken the immune system. So, and it's interesting because, you know, the homeopathic belief is that molds and bacteria and viruses don't cause disease. It's because the human organism is weak that the molds and bacteria and viruses take a foothold.
Mm-hmm.
So if you strengthen the organism, your body's going to be a lot stronger. But unfortunately, I think in our country, we're in such a sad state with our food and all the toxins, that sometimes even the best homeopathic medication doesn't do its job, because you got to treat those underlying issues.
True. And if you have mold inside your wall, it doesn't much matter what homeopathic medication you take. You need the surgery to get out the offending, infected foreign body.
Right. You know, and you just got me thinking, because, the breast implants are made of a plastic material. And one thing that I really fear is the most common ophthalmic procedure is cataract surgery. And they're putting polymethylmethacrylate plastic in the eye. And they know that plastic is leaching into the aqueous, and it's right inside the blood-brain barrier. And that could also be a focus for mold to develop. And many times when you look inside the eye lens implant, you see accumulations of debris, and it looks like it's a moldy-like material on the intraocular lens, which is kind of scary.
Yeah, that could be a biofilm. I had talked with several ophthalmologists about silicone, and we kind of came to the conclusion that, and it's true, any foreign body in the body can did a biofilm around it. And, of course, in the eye, that biofilm is likely to affect the vision just because it's going to be debris. But silicone in the eye doesn't seem to cause the same problems it does in the body. And it may be because it doesn't interact, at least in most cases, it doesn't interact with the lymphatic or the vascular system. It tends to be more inert, given that it doesn't form a biofilm. It doesn't tend to cause inflammation like it does, say, in the tear duct. If my patients who are allergic to silicone have that little plug put in their tear duct, that's silicone, they develop a inflammatory response around that plug pretty quickly.
Well, it could just be that it's a slow, insidious process. You don't have that marked inflammation. But I have concern that anytime you put a foreign body in the body, you have the potential mm-hmm. for damage.
Yeah, there is. But it seems that my silicone allergic patients have less problems with, you know, the lens implants than they do with silicone in other parts of their body, and that may be why.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, you're right, any foreign body that goes in can be a potential problem. So you advise cleaning up your diet, and there is a very good first section of the book on that. Gluten sensitivity, that's something that you addressed really well in the book. Would you like to speak about that for a minute?
I think I'm seeing more and more gluten sensitivity, and anytime I see someone with an eye problem, I'm always looking at reducing inflammation. There always seems to be an mm-hmm. inflammatory component to macular degeneration, glaucoma, whatever the eye disease is, and certainly iritis or keratitis. And I advise patients, even though they may not have frank celiac disease, that to just give it a try. Go on a gluten-free diet for a couple of weeks to see if there's any changes in their symptoms and see if it helps. Going mm-hmm. on a strict gluten-free diet can be very difficult. But when someone
especially
is desperate and they're losing... and they're losing their vision, I think it's a good approach to take. It's kind of interesting, personally, I think I may have a mild gluten sensitivity because when I eat a lot of bread and pasta here in the United States, I do have loose stools and sometimes I have some gastrointestinal disturbance. But when I was doing my research in Italy, and my wife and I lived in Italy for 3 months, you know, if you're living in Rome, it's almost impossible to be on a gluten-free diet. I mean, I ate a lot of bread, you know, pizza, mm-hmm. pasta, you name it. But I did not have the gastrointestinal problems. And I talked with a naturopathic doctor, and she told me that it's probably the way we're processing our wheat. The wheat berries are stored for long periods of time. There's pesticides. And, mold is developing with the wheat berries. So then when we do process the wheat, it's being carried. The pesticides and the mold is being carried with the wheat. So we're developing a cross-allergy with the gluten. So people who may not have a gluten, full-blown gluten sensitivity or allergy because of the processing and storage of the wheat berries, are developing problems, which it doesn't seem to be an issue in Europe just because of the different storage and processing and, they've banned a lot of genetically modified material in Europe, which helps the overall cause.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. I noticed that if I stay away from processed foods, but eat bread at restaurants where the bread is fresh baked, it seems to have less problems with that too. So there could be other additives too that are not good.
Which is a blessing when they put that nice warm bread on the table in front of you and you're hungry and you smell that
right,
aroma.
That's true.
It's pretty tough to say, I'm sorry, can't eat it.
I can't eat that, right. Yes. Now, you have you use what we use here, which is the zinc tally test, to see if people are deficient in zinc. And you probably find what we do is that many people are deficient in zinc. How is zinc and chromium related to eye disease, these deficiencies?
Well, there's no question. There's been many NIH studies to show that zinc deficiency is linked to macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. As you're aware, zinc is probably an essential element for many, many enzymatic reactions in the body. It's also essential for our electrical system. And especially when I use microcurrent or low levels of current to treat people with eye disease, we want to make sure that the zinc is at an adequate level. But across the board, I would say that well over 80% of patients that I see are deficient in zinc, even if they're taking zinc as a supplement. And usually they're taking zinc oxide, which is fully absorbed in the body, or they have digestive issues or absorption issues, but they're not taking enough. So one goal I have is to put them on a chelated form of zinc, like zinc colonate, zinc acetate, zinc citrate, and I put them on a high dose, maybe 100 milligrams. I also advise them to consider a Mars cocktail, which for the listeners is a high-potency vitamin mixture, which I put in additional zinc sulfate to help bring their levels up. In regards to the chromium, now chromium is interesting. There's been some studies to show that chromium deficiency may be linked to glaucoma. So anytime I evaluate a glaucoma patient, I'll do the chromium tally test using the 1% solution of chromium chloride, and then I'll advise them to supplement their vitamin protocol with some chromium chloride.
And there are some other particular nutritional needs with macular degeneration. Would you like to just describe macular degeneration for those listeners who are not aware of what it is? And
degeneration is probably one of the most common causes of visual loss in the elderly over the age of 65. I like to always say the elderly is older than me. Right now I'm 63, but I'm 65.
Right.
I'll be saying the elderly is 70.
You're 70.
You know,
you're right.
70. But right now it's 65. Of course, when I was younger, I would say that everybody over the age of 50 starts to get macular degeneration.
That's
now
right.
I'm pushing
yeah.
that up. But it is an aging change, a kind of like wrinkling of our skin. And you know, the body is aging, and unfortunately the retina has a very high nutritional demand, very high oxygen demand. So in many cases, people may feel quite healthy and not have any physical problems, but they're developing macular degeneration. So I look at three components. One is there adequate nutrition? Is there adequate circulation? And is there adequate oxygenation? So you asked me the question about nutrition. I think all of your antioxidants are essential for the health of the eye. And then we have the omega-6 and omega-3s, which I feel that fish oils are not the answer. I think fish oils might be contributing to eye problems. So I highly recommend plant-based omega-6s and 3s. Then we have all the bioflavonoids. Like lutein, beta-carotene, zeaxanthin. And it's interesting, you know, when an eye doctor looks in the eye, they see something called a foveal light reflex, and it looks yellowish. It's also called the macula lutea. Lutea means yellow. So someone that really has truly healthy ocular function, you'll see a yellow reflex in the eye. And to me, that's a direct reflection on their nutritional state. In fact, there's even a company that can measure the amount of lutein in the eye, and they correlate that with diet. So you certainly need all those bioflavonoids. And I don't know if you have noticed, if you eat a lot of carrots, your skin sort of turns an orangish color. And the mm-hmm. reason is those bioflavonoids are being absorbed into your body, and they have a kind of a protective effect against mm-hmm. The harmful effects of ultraviolet light and oxidants in the body. So you certainly need those colorful foods and vegetables. And I always tell my patients, you know, colorful foods, colorful vegetables are going to give you colorful vision. So eat a good variety of those leafy green vegetables, yellows, reds. Eat a lot of color, and you know your eye will stay healthy.
Now, the eye requires a great deal of hydration, and if you're not adequately hydrated, you can get problems with the eye. You want to describe what probably problems with the eyes may occur before problems with other organs with dehydration. Is that right?
Well, we certainly need good retinal circulation. And one mm-hmm. of the best ways to keep your blood thin and reduce the viscosity and keep the blood flowing is to be well hydrated. When you're dehydrated,
right.
the blood becomes thicker and you have a greater tendency for sluggish blood flow. Also, mm-hmm. proper hydration is the best way to detoxify the body. When we have chronic dehydration, a lot of toxins will accumulate in the eye. The retinal flow is sluggish. And those toxins are just a disastrous situation when they begin to accumulate in the eye. So I'm a big advocate of increasing your hydration, drinking plenty of good water as a health measure to keep your eye and also your general physical health in top shape. There was a book you're probably familiar with, it written by Dr. Batten and Gelvey, who mm-hmm. the title was "Our Bodies Many Cries for Water," and he feels that dehydration is a contributing factor to many, many chronic diseases. And I feel that's so for eye disease. You know, as men get older, they get their prostate problems, they drink less water. The ladies have had their kids, they have weak bladders, they drink less water, and we're walking around in a chronic dehydrated state. So water might be one of the best medicines that we can put into our body, good pure water.
Now, I interviewed Dr. Let's see if I remember his name. I forgot it for now. But anyway, he's the gentleman who performed $20 million worth of research for the cell phone companies. It was Dr. Carlo, that's his name. Anyway, he found that cell phone radiation actually does cause neuroepithelial malignancies, tumors of the eye, parotid tumors, and cranial nerve tumors of the eighth cranial nerve, the benign tumors. And it does it by increased free radicals. And one of the things that is that you can do, and you've actually mentioned this in the later chapters in your book, is to take melatonin before you go to bed. And melatonin works by decreasing free radicals in these areas, including in the eye, and can be very protective against tumors forming. Now, I happen to have a pigmented lesion in my retina that started to turn probably because of cell phone and Kindle use. I was actually listening to the Kindle. You know, there's a text-to-speech feature, but I had the Kindle near my eye. And so I, without knowing it, I was trying to turn this mole into a melanoma in my retina. So I learned a lot about that.
Well, in my practice, I mean, I certainly agree with you that electromagnetic radiation, unwanted energy fields like that are very hazardous to the eye. But I, in my experience, I have not seen that many eye tumors. And, of course, in my age group, I mainly deal with people over the age of 60. So, you know, the abuse of cell phones really hasn't hit that age group. A few people have them, but it's nothing like the younger generation where they're living with their cell phone. So it will be very interesting to see if there's an increased incidence in ocular tumors and eye disease. I mean, there's no question in my mind, since my residency over 30 years ago, I'm seeing a greater incidence of glaucoma in younger people. You know, before glaucoma was a disease of the elderly, now, my goodness, I'm seeing it in 20- and 30-year-olds. And they're seeing the need of, you know, the problems with eye drops and the allergic reactions, and they're just living a miserable life. So that's one of the areas that a lot of these alternative treatments can certainly help people like that.
Is there a role in increased free radicals being associated with glaucoma?
You know, glaucoma is a disease of decrease in circulation to the optic nerve, and I also think it's a disease of the central nervous system, of the autonomic nervous system. So that's a good question, and I really can't correlate it to free radicals like I can with macular degeneration. I think that glaucoma is more of a neurosensory problem, lack of circulation to the nerve, neurodegeneration, and clearly I think that many cases of glaucoma are related to heavy metal poisoning, possibly to Lyme disease, other parasitic and viral infections that maybe, you know, we haven't identified, but we're not able to identify, or we just don't look for it.
Right, that's true. I wanted to share with you a story of a patient I have right now. He is a black gentleman who had a mole on his hip. And for years, he wore his cell phone right over the mole. And the mole turned into melanoma. And as you know, black people don't get melanoma. It's very, very, very rare. So that, actually, I told that story to my retinal specialist, and he's going to pay close attention because, of course, he does see. He's one of the specialists in the southeast, and he does see a lot of retinal tumors, you know, a lot of the pigmented lesions that then turn into melanoma. And I told him to, you know, that if he's got people that the moles are turning in, they need to really put the cell phone away from their face and, you know, use whatever. There's all sorts of protection, but probably just keep the cell phone a good distance from their face. So that's
the use of computers, the overuse of computers. You were talking about your Kindle, you know, using the audio feature on your Kindle, and I think overuse of computers, and especially light toxicity at night. One of the interests I have is this condition called LAN, light at night, and this is researched by Professor Abraham Hayem, and I talk about that in my book. He feels very strongly that light at night interferes with the circadian rhythm. It is a contributing factor to many of our health problems, including cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, macular degeneration, diabetes, etc. And it's interesting, he did really extensive research, and he investigated the particular wavelength of light or color that caused the greatest damage at night. And surprisingly, he came up with the wavelength, the color blue. So blue light at night, and he is scared to death that this could cause the biggest health crisis in our country, in the world, actually. Because what is our federal government doing? They're forcing us to use contact fluorescent lights, which give off a blue spectrum.
Right.
The incandescent lights are what we need to use at night. So I advise my patients to really decrease the use of any type of lighting which produces a blue wavelength. you know, television, your computer, your phones, and if you do have to use your some type of light at night, make sure it's a incandescent light, which gives off the red spectrum, or wear blue-blocking glasses. Now, these are glasses that eliminate the blue wavelength of light entering into your eye.
Yeah, I just wear the sleep mask.
Well, interesting.
Is that a good thing to do?
Enough, Professor Higham feels that the sleep mask does absolutely nothing to protect your circadian rhythm because we have photosensors on our skin. And
really?
Some investigators say even the illumination of your alarm clock hitting your skin can affect your circadian rhythm. So you need to sleep in a totally
dark room.
What if
you're under the covers?
Under the covers.
What if you're totally under the covers? I mean, I think that would be pretty
That'll
dark.
Be all right. That'll be all right. You may have some oxygen deprivation, but that'll work. But in our wellness center here, we have blackout drapes in the room, and I have to laugh because I tell my patients they need to drink more water, and they say, Dr. Condrat, you're killing me. You're telling me to drink more water. You put me in a dark room. I can't find a bathroom. So what we do is we have motion detector night lights. So as soon as their feet hit the floor in their bedroom, the light comes on. So that's one way. You got to sleep in a totally dark room. And I like your idea of melatonin because the melatonin can help induce that sleep cycle, help improve the circadian rhythm, and it acts as a very powerful antioxidant at night. So melatonin and sleeping in a totally dark room.
Yeah, a lot of my patients have GABA deficiencies because of the biotoxin disease, and the biotoxin pathway also, because of damaging leptin receptors in the hypothalamus, will decrease melatonin levels by decreasing alpha-MSH. So we put them on melatonin, 3 to 6 milligrams, and then Gabitrol, which has a bunch of GABA and other neurotransmitters in it, and they sleep pretty well, so... That's a little something you can take, and if people are having a lot of trouble sleeping, add Gabitrol to the melatonin. It works
very
well.
I'll have to look at that, especially for the patients that the melatonin just doesn't seem to work.
Right, and that may be because their GABA, they have a profound GABA deficiency, and those people are also nervous all the time. They have uncontrolled anxiety that they just don't have enough GABA. And, you know, the doctors prescribe them, clonidine and clonopin and other lorazepam and everything. And it does work because those do help with GABA, but it's better to actually give them the substance, I think, than the drug.
But you do need a good night's sleep. And I think that's time when the retina regenerates. There's a tremendous amount of regenerative activity in the eye, and people abuse their precious night by exposure to light, not getting enough sleep. They're just a setup for chronic eye problems.
And also immune problems. You know, they have decreased growth hormone. They age quicker, they have immune problems, and they don't heal from surgery either if they don't sleep. You know, they have chronic problems. You have a whole section in here on homeopathic treatment of eye disease. Would you like to comment on just a few of the important homeopathic medications and what you use them for?
Well, I love homeopathy. Homeopathy is what got me started in alternative medicine, even though I do oxidative treatments, microcurrent, light therapy. Homeopathy, to me, is where miracles truly happen. And it's because the homeopathic approach looks at the body. You know, if we believe the body has a wisdom, anytime we have a symptom or a disease, the body needs that to maintain homeostasis. So in homeopathy, we give a substance which actually causes those symptoms. So that may seem kind of strange. I mean, if you have a fever, you take a homeopathic medicine which causes a fever.
Right.
If you have a discharge from the eye, you give a homeopathic remedy that causes a discharge. When I was cured mm-hmm. of my asthma, I was given a strong homeopathic remedy which causes asthma. And
right.
you know, the patients yeah. and people might think, "Why, you nuts, Doc? It's going to make me worse." But actually, if you believe the body has the wisdom, let's help the body do what it's trying to do. So with mm-hmm. eye problems, you know, if you bruise your eye and you have a black and blue mark, you're given arnica, which is a great homeopathic remedy for the eye, treating bruises or injuries.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a lot of watering and tearing, allium sepia, which is the onion, you're given homeopathic onion. So
mm-hmm.
when I do a homeopathic evaluation, I look at the particular symptoms, and we kind of match those with homeopathic remedies that produce those symptoms. But the really interesting thing about homeopathy is that we look for the emotional state. So I'm a firm believer that every eye disease is tied into an emotional state. So we look at the associated emotion, whether it's grief or anger. And in many situations, it's anger or frustration. In Chinese
mm-hmm.
medicine, they believe that the liver and eye are connected, and the liver in Chinese medicine is the organ for anger and frustration. And, of course, there's many things in our society to be angry about and frustrated about. As you get older, you get frustrations, and then you develop eye problems, and that makes your frustrations even worse, so it's a vicious cycle. But the truly remarkable healing or positive effects take place when you're able to identify that emotional component along with the eye component, and you prescribe a homeopathic remedy. And I've had some unbelievable success stories. You know, someone who has a central retinal artery occlusion and they're blind, and after one homeopathic remedy, they regain their eyesight. Not supposed to happen.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. And you have another remedy here. I don't know if I can pronounce it. Staphysargia.
Staphysargia.
And other things.
Staphysargia is a great, great homeopathic remedy. And the key word in Staphysargia is indignation
mm-hmm.
Or anger. And many times, it's the number one remedy for the treatment of styes. And I had an
mm-hmm.
interesting case. This woman came in with an ugly stye on her eyelid, and it was responsive to treatments, conventional treatments. Even surgery didn't help her stye. It just
mm-hmm.
came back. So I was taking her history, and I asked her when she developed the stye. And she was in a checkout counter at the supermarket, and the clerk insulted her,
mm-hmm.
and that indignation or insult just stayed with her and resonated. She became so angry, she stormed out of the grocery store without paying for her products, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was like, couldn't sleep that night, that episode of
mm-hmm.
indignation. So when I prescribed Staphysargia, which is a big remedy for the sty and indignation, you know, her problem just disappeared in a couple of days. And also our mental
yeah.
and emotional state changed.
Yeah, that's very true. In psychotherapy, they say that infection is conflict not properly resolved in the mental or emotional plane that settles as infection in the physical. So a sty is definitely infection.
So I like that about the homeopathic approach. I sit down with a person who's maybe had macular degeneration for 5 years, and we talk a little bit about, you know, what was going on in their life 5 years ago, and often it's a traumatic
mm-hmm.
event. They have a death of a loved one, maybe a financial ruin of their company, and then they develop their eye problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of like a detective, and that's what I love about homeopathic ophthalmology. You're a detective, and you find out maybe these contributing factors, and then the right homeopathic remedy and the right treatment just helps the patient so profoundly. Not only their physical eye problem, but their mental and emotional state changes.
And you see patterns, and that's what's important, is you see the patterns, how the mental and emotional states precede the physical problem, and the homeopathic remedy shifting both of them.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, or one
right.
before the other. And then, you know, it's you see these miracles. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. homeopathy isn't easy. You know, the common question I got is, what can I take for glaucoma? Well, my goodness, mm-hmm. I could treat 100 glaucoma patients, and each one would probably need a different homeopathic remedy.
Right.
So you really got to treat. You really got to treat the individual.
Yeah, my front desk supervisor is our homeopath. She's from India, where, of course, homeopathy is well regarded. And whenever we have certain difficult problems, we always call her in to help because she's real good at the difficult stuff. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a chapter on microcurrent stimulation. Would you like to tell the audience about that?
Well, microcurrent stimulation is a very fascinating treatment. It's widely used in a lot of medical subspecialties. Orthopedic surgeons use it. Plastic surgeons are using it. Rehabilitation medicine. And a lot of athletes use microcurrent. Microcurrent uses a very low-level current in terms of a microamp, which is a millionth of an amp. And the amperage in your home is probably 100 to 200 amps, so really using a millionth of an amp. And what this does is it stimulates cellular activity. You know, our body is an electrical organism. We need a flow of electricity and current. And
mm-hmm.
when we do have disease or a disturbance in the body, sometimes there is a lack of current, lack of electrons. So by putting a low-level current back into the organism, you can help regenerate that part of the body. And studies have shown that microcurrent does improve blood flow, reduces inflammation, and has a neuroprotective effect. But the most phenomenal research was done by a Korean by the name of Chang, C-H-E-N-G, and he showed that microcurrent dramatically improves cellular activity. Up to 500%, if you can believe that. So microcurrent is stimulating dysfunctional cells in the eye, helping them regenerate, helping them regain their function. And it's one of my main treatments for helping people restore lost vision. But it's not just microcurrent alone, because if you're nutritionally deficient and if you don't have those building blocks, microcurrent is not going to work as effectively. So you got to take care of those underlying issues, and then microcurrent can really have a dramatic effect.
Mm-hmm. We've been working a little bit with PEMF, which is a pulse electromagnetic therapy that increases stem cells. I know you have a chapter in your book on stem cells. Have you had any experience using PEMF to increase stem cells?
Oh, yeah. We're using pulse electromagnetic field in our office, and I did my own in-office study comparing
uh-huh.
it to microcurrent, and I've talked to some electrical engineers and developers, and they all agree that the pulse electromagnetic field is a type of microcurrent therapy. You know,
mm-hmm.
the pulse electromagnetic produces a pulse wave, and where that wave interacts, electrical current is generated. So microcurrent, there's a direct contact. Electrodes are put on the body, and a current
mm-hmm.
that flows into the body. With
right.
the pulse electromagnetic field, you can actually treat someone from a distance without touching them. That pulse
mm-hmm.
energy then produces a field. My interest was, can you direct that pulse energy to a location in the eye to get a more dramatic effect? So I have been looking at at that in terms of treating macular degeneration and glaucoma. But right now, I have not seen a significant difference using those modalities. They seem to be very similar in their effect.
So, microcurrent improves stem cell therapy's effects, and the majority of stem cells, are these being injected, or how are we getting stem cells into the eye?
Well, my experience with stem cells is limited. I traveled to Europe, visited the largest stem cell center, and observed them utilizing stem cells. And I wasn't really impressed with using stem cells alone. In fact, there was an article published, I think it was in Lancet Journal, using stem cells to treat a juvenile form of macular degeneration. And this is after 3 months, and the level of improvement was only 5 letters. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing, you know, when I use microcurrent light therapy, I'm seeing 5 to 10 letter improvement.
Right.
Using,
so that's much better.
Just microcurrent. And it's not as expensive.
Right.
But I do agree, there has been some studies show that microcurrent alone will improve stem cell activity. So that could be one of the mechanisms of microcurrent. As you utilize microcurrent, you're taking existing stem cells and you're improving their function. So then they're
Also, not just their function, but their turnover, I mean, their multiplication rate, because that's what I think.
Right.
I interviewed Dr. Donnie Rudd on the radio show a few weeks ago, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but they were doing stem cell research on the shuttle and discovered that when it was in the electromagnetic field of the Earth, the stem cells took off like crazy reproducing. So that's how they came up with PEMF.
Yeah,
right, exactly. That's how they came up with the idea, because they saw this experimentally. So it may be easier, especially in the eye and in the brain, to use your own stem cells and then make them, you know, make them reproduce quickly to heal damage in the brain and in the eye, just because of all the blood-brain barrier and the, you know, all the problems getting stem cells into these areas.
Mm-hmm.
So
also light therapy. I was at a stem cell conference, and they were talking about different wavelengths of light stimulating stem cell proliferation.
Well, that's true. You can stimulate stem cells with laser light and activate it that way. They're doing that in Thailand.
I don't think you need laser light. Non-coherent light has the same effect on stem cells.
Right.
There's a Russian researcher by the name of Tina Carew, who has demonstrated this in vitro. There's no difference between laser and non-coherent light.
Right.
The only difference with laser, it has deeper tissue penetration if you're treating musculoskeletal problems with the cold laser.
Yeah, and we're in plastic surgery, we're actually harvesting stem cells from the abdomen. So we would be re-injecting them, you know, that you'd be treating them once they're out of the body and then re-injecting them. So all of those things have to be dealt with. And now the FDA has decided it has to regulate all stem cells. So we're not able to do it in the U.S. right now unless you're in a clinical trial. Well, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Would you like to give the listeners your contact information?
I hope that any of you that are listening, if you're having vision problems, you're not happy with your eyesight, please consider reading my book. It's called The 10 Essentials to Save Your Sight. You can buy the book on Amazon.com, or you can go to my website, healingthee.com, healing.theeye.com, or you can give the office a call, 800-430-9328. 800-430-9328. 828.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. Your book's a wealth of information. I do want to mention one thing that caught my eye at the end of the book, and that's the benefit of oxygen therapy on diabetic retinopathy. When you have diabetes for any length of time, your kidneys and your eyes can start to be affected by the adverse effect of high sugar. And this is a simple method of just taking some oxygen, for a short time every day that improves diabetic retinopathy. I think that's a great thing to let people know about.
Well, it's been a real pleasure being on your show, and keep up the good work. Educating people on all these wonderful alternative ways to improve your health.
Yes, and if you get women who have dry eyes, who have joint pain, who have fibromyalgia, ask them if they have breast implants, because I bet they do. Those are the
okay.
And their breast implants need to come out because they're supposed to be changed out every 10 years. And they were never told that. And a lot of times they won't even tell their doctors they have breast implants. So that's a problem, too. But anyway, thanks so much for being on the show. We've been interviewing Dr. Edward Kondroit. His book, 10 Essentials to Save Your Sight, is a great book with many, many different holistic and alternative treatments that are a lot easier than the traditional treatments. And if you have a serious eye problem, I would suggest you get in contact with him and fly down to Central Florida and see him. Anyway, thanks a lot, Dr. Kondroit. I appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye now. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we will have on Dr. Norman Shealy from Birth to Bliss, The Power of Conscientious Living. And on the 12th of October, Penny Pierce is back with her new book, Leap of Perception. Join us then. Thank you.